Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor Kesem and Diana Kelly. We live in a cyberspace almost all the time, but do we know enough about living in it securely? Join this dynamic duo as they take you through an exploration of daily cyber activities and how you can make better choices to make them secure for yourself and your family. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome to Your Everyday Cyber. I'm Limor Kesem, a threat intelligence professional and cybersecurity advisor to some of the largest corporations in the world. Also, one toddler's mom. My co-host is Diana Kelly, a cybersecurity expert who is the CTO and co-founder of Security Curve. Today, we're going to be talking about what consumers should know when it comes to privacy and mobile phones. We all have one. Getting up and setting up a new phone has become a regular occurrence for many of us. Whether you dropped it on the ground and now have a spiderweb of broken glass for a screen, or you're excited to have extra megapixels on your phone camera, chances are that every year or so, you're probably getting a new phone. My neighbor does. He has an infinite number of ideas on how to destroy his phone and bounces from Apple to Android-based devices all the time. And in some cases, he just wants to change phones for no reason, just because it's new. So, Diana, how often do you replace your phone?
I have to say new phones are fun, but they can be a little bit annoying. So I get where your neighbor's coming from. But whether I liked it or not, when I was traveling a lot, and I don't know if there's correlation or causality, but when I was traveling all the time, I seemed to be somehow something weird and catastrophic happened with my phone about once a year, whether it was just the battery started to fail, it would only hold a charge for like 10 minutes, or I had one phone that just would refuse to get on Wi-Fi, like nothing would happen to go to the store, nothing. They couldn't figure it out. So I was having weird phone issues every year. So I was going through them once a year. But now I've had this phone for just over a year, and I haven't been on a plane very much in the past year. Well, not at all, really. So I don't know. Maybe I can hold on for a little while longer. I'd love to be able to hold on to a phone for at least 2 years, just for the cost saving.
You probably will. I think that when we travel a lot, there is actual radiation called galactic radiation in the airplane, and it accumulates in human bodies. So I'm sure it also accumulates in our electronics, which might have affected your phones. So I hope you get to keep this one. And I can't help but think back to my neighbor and how his phone hopping can really affect his privacy. In most cases, what typically people would do, and he does too, is just a factory reset. And he figures, you know, I reset it, now I can sell the phone off. I deleted my data. But how actually sufficient is that? And also, getting a new phone can be a trigger for kind of reassessing which applications we're using and maybe even what we're subscribed to. And it can be a good time to think about privacy.
Yeah, you're so right, Limor. I mean, even if you've had that same phone for a while, it's really never a bad time to reevaluate your mobile phone privacy and check in on your settings. I mean, we've all seen the cop shows where a user's location can be tracked using data and connections to cell phone towers. But that's not the only location information about me that my phone shares. I mean, Starbucks, for example, knows where I am when I'm using their app to find coffee. Google Map looks for, you know, requires location information in order to work properly. So, and location is only one aspect of privacy to consider.
That is true. And that is why we are definitely excited to have a special guest with us today to help us kind of break down privacy considerations that we should care about when we're using a smartphone and the various apps that we download. And, you know, it's phones, but it's the gadgets that we connect also to our phones or to things in our home, which is a whole list that's becoming long and diverse. And our guest today is Rachel Arnold from Secure Nation. Welcome, Rachel, to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Mm-hmm. To get us started on this privacy discussion, can you explain a little bit about what privacy means and why smartphones and smart gadgets are things that users should be thinking about more when it comes to their privacy?
Sure. I mean, privacy is exactly what you think it is, right? The ability to move, think, say, do things without the entire world being privy to what those actions might be. When it comes to any of our devices, the biggest concern for a lot of folks is essentially their privacy. But there's a balance there between security and privacy that's constantly doing a dance back and forth, right? The more secure we make our things, the less private they are, especially if you're looking at an enterprise level or any of those kinds of devices that we need to perform our jobs, right? The security teams need to be able to watch the traffic and how it moves to mitigate any vulnerabilities or threats that may be coming towards them. So it's definitely a delicate balance between the two.
Hey, Rachel, you know, at the top, we mentioned a little bit about law enforcement tracking suspects. You know, we've all seen these on the TV shows. But I once read an article where someone was exercising regularly in a place that a crime was committed. And then they were seen as automatically by real law enforcement as a suspect because of actual law enforcement tracking. So is there a way that we can limit our location data on our devices? And should we? Because is that going to impact how we interact with some of those other, you know, tools I was talking about, like Google Maps?
It will. It'll definitely affect the way that you are able to use those platforms in a way that's beneficial to you. But if privacy is more more important, then yes, there's definitely ways that you can turn off your location sharing, even turning off the phone entirely. But there's always going to be that one app somewhere, that rogue app that requires you to turn the permissions off directly within the application itself before it will stop pinging back and sharing your location.
So do you think that we should, so how would I go about, you know, not sharing my location? And is that something you could recommend to listeners that maybe turning it on and off, would that be a solution to get the functionality but not always be leaving location breadcrumbs, so to speak?
You can. And I'm not sure if anyone else has noticed this, but I definitely have over the course of the last probably 18 months or 2 years or so, a lot more applications are asking permission for us to share location in a way that's, you know, constantly running. Is that an option you want? Or only when the application is open is another option. And then, you know, the other one is just off. So a lot of those application developers are really doing us a big favor by prompting those sorts of questions right from the get-go, especially for those who never considered, why is this application tracking where I am? Why does that matter? Why is that important? You know, it was surprising for some family and friends when they asked me about, you know, the location bits on some applications that they didn't expect to be sharing their location all the time. So it's a nice move in the right direction.
Okay, so the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that law enforcement probably needs a warrant to track your phone. And still, it can be chilling to think about the places it can lead and the implications. Well, what about all the apps that we willingly give our location to? I mean, we mentioned, you know, coffee, food delivery apps, weather, COVID tracking apps, ride sharing. There's a ton of applications that we use. Are there privacy matters to consider there too?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, you have to consider what it is that you're giving up, right? Like, these apps are quote unquote free. They're not really free, right? They are trading your geolocation and your information with what you hope are advertisers on the other end. So that way they can more effectively advertise to you. And their causality for that is based on, you know, what others in your area also prefer to do or eat or purchase, or what deals they're taking advantage of, that sort of thing, which is in a way, it's kind of great. I was actually talking about this with another InfoSec professional a couple of weeks ago, where we were discussing how everyone seems so very angry about, you know, they can track you and do this, that, and the other. And we're like, well, you know, I didn't know that there was an Etsy store that had something I just couldn't live without. Right. But my ads are tailored to me and to my preferences and my geolocation. So it's a balance just in between, you know, what you want to get out of the applications and what you're willing to give up for it. As long as you understand what you're giving up for the services that you're receiving, I feel like that is that's a personal decision from one user to the next. And if you don't understand what it is that you're giving up, I highly recommend that you actually sift through some of your privacy policies.
Yeah, that's being informed. That's a great point, because it is, it's a trade-off. And one of the trade-offs that we make a lot is, and sometimes we don't be very informed about it, is when we're installing new apps, very often they'll say, these are the permissions that this app wants. And you just want the app. So you just say, sure, that's okay. You know, but there are some apps that you wouldn't expect that are asking for things like, can I have camera access? Can I have access to your hard drive for recording? Can I have access to your microphone? You know, is this, you know, grabbing keywords and posting personal ads to your social feeds? Are these concerns, you know, as we're installing new apps, should we be concerned about that permission grab?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's consent 101, right? Like, understand what you're consenting to. And again, you know, I definitely point everyone back to their privacy policies that are involved. But some of the social media apps are notorious for being very legalese. You know, just average Joe can't really decipher the language that's included in those privacy policies. And you get cross-eyed reading it, you just, you know, wave it away, because everybody's on Facebook, right? So you want to be there too, or TikTok or LinkedIn or any of them, but they do operate under the pretense that they are going to be using that information solely to advertise to you, right? Because the advertisers are the ones that are really paying the bill. We're the product, and you should never misunderstand that. You're called a user because you are not a customer. You are a user. You are a user of a product, and your actions, your like buttons, your comments, your messaging within those applications, your geolocation is being sold. You're being farmed. So you have to give that up to be able to use these free applications. And understanding what that means to you is something that is, again, an individual's decision based on your own personal preferences. Whenever those applications come up and ask you for access to your camera or your phone or your contacts list or anything like that, a lot of times what they're doing is making it permissible for your phone calls to come through while you have that application open. But if you go back and track through the privacy policy on that, there's nothing usually that covers whether or not they're going to be using that information, right? What time someone called you based on your contacts list and maybe some keywords that happened during that conversation. That's why you see so many InfoSec professionals jumping to platforms like Signal or looking for end-to-end encryption type platforms to regain some of that privacy that they really feel like that they're losing.
I find what's really getting to me nowadays is, you know, yeah, when I use a free application, I understand I'm the product and it's going to ask me for a lot of data, or it's going to seep a lot of data out of my phone. But there are applications that I pay for. I pay for the download and I pay for in-app purchases, and they still suck up so much data. And I'm trying to figure out, how can I get an idea about those apps that really guzzle a lot of personal data and could pose a risk to my privacy and even to my freedom? There are applications that, you know, can cause the government to start following what you do.
Oh, yeah, definitely there are. I mean, some of the worst ones that I feel like just prey on the biggest vulnerabilities that we each harbor just as human beings are the dating apps. They are absolutely atrocious, and some of them are paid. But it's how is it that you correlate data in such a way that you understand when somebody is loneliest? And how are you advertising to that person knowing that they are at an emotionally vulnerable point in their day or their week? Or their life. Is that right? Is it ethical? I don't think
probably so. Probably not, but it's probably a moneymaker, that's for sure.
It is definitely a moneymaker. So it's not necessarily just that the data is being collected, but it's the way that it's collected and the way that it is analyzed and the way that we are put into buckets so that we can be more easily advertised to. Right?
Yeah. We really are the product. So, you know, with that, Rachel, I was wondering what your top 3 to 5 things when you get, as an expert, when you get a new phone, what are the first few things that you do to make sure that you're taking care of your privacy?
I go through every piece of bloatware and application that came with the phone, first and foremost. And I am a crazy level of nerd. So I also download the application and all of its files through a couple of processes that I'm happy to share with anybody if they want to come ask me. You can open it up on your desktop after that and look through and find any hard-coded API keys. That's a big way that you can be infiltrated as a security risk or vulnerability that somebody can piggyback on through the platform and be able to exfiltrate not just, you know, the data that you're already agreeing to share with the company, right? But as a criminal threat actor. So that's maybe a little excessive compared to what everybody else is willing to do. But whenever I go through and set up, say, my father's phone or his applications or anything else, I always make sure that anything that's a financial application, he has multi-factor authentication turned on. That's extremely important, right? It's not necessarily a foolproof kind of thing, but you definitely want to make yourself not the lowest hanging fruit when it comes to your cybersecurity. Another thing that I look for is this app a legitimate app, right? Just because a million people have downloaded something does not mean that it comes from a good resource, right? It's just like looking up or researching anything online anywhere. You don't just take the first piece of information as that's right, right? Because nobody lies to you on the internet. The same thing with applications. Some of these applications are not safe for you to use, you know, in the way that you would hope that you were going to use them. So that's something else I check for. And then just understanding, you know, and ask lots of questions of the retailer and of the, you know, whoever's providing the service of your phone, whether it be, you know, AT&T why can't I think of any other carriers?
T-Mobile.
Right, yeah,
Sprint. There you go. Mint.
T-Mobile, Sprint, thank you. Yeah, obviously I'm an AT&T customer. That's the only thing I can think about. So ask them loads of questions about what things in the background need to be running to keep the OS up, and just understanding what parts of your phone have to function and why you need geolocation on or when it's appropriate for you to turn it off. A lot of times whenever we're at home, we turn ours off. There's no reason for it to be on.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great point. And just asking the questions. Don't be afraid. I think some people get afraid of, well, if I turn this off, will my phone break? Yeah, some functionality might be interrupted. You can turn it back on, but that's some great advice, Rachel, on asking the question and understanding why things are turned on or off. So thank you so much, Rachel, for being here and helping your everyday cyber listeners to be in the know and proactive about our mobile privacy settings.
Yes, thank you so much again for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Yes, I'm so glad we have this chat with you. And it's time to take back some control over our personal data through our phones. That's like the one thing we're on all day, every day. So thank you all our audience for being with us today. Please follow the podcast and get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter. That's at @cyber_everyday. We're all on LinkedIn if you wish to send us some questions in advance or to suggest topics for upcoming episodes. We're very open to that. You can also email us at youreverydaycyber@securitycurve.com. Our podcast page has more details for you and resources for each and every one of our episodes. So thank you again for tuning in, and stay safe out there.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Your Everyday Cyber Podcast with Limor and Diana. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.